be good is her name. I sing my lion song, brush my mane.
You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Joe Moore. Saturday was something of a homecoming for one of the brightest stars in the world of jazz, Gregory Porter. Considered by many to be one of the top male jazz vocalists today, returned home to Bakersfield for a sold-out concert at CSUB's Doré Theater to benefit Habitat for Humanity.
Just look out in delight. You dare not let them walk around, 'cause they might just bite. Does she know?
Porter has come a long way since he graduated from Highland High School in the late 1980s. He's won 2 Grammy Awards for Best Jazz Vocal Album, and his new album, Nat King Cole and Me, is receiving critical acclaim worldwide, earning him prime spots on network TV, like The Today Show and Late Night with Stephen Colbert.
L is for the way you look at me. O is for the only one I see. V is very, very extraordinary. E is even more than anyone that you adore.
He's even headlining a concert at Carnegie Hall a couple of weeks from now. And Bakersfield continues to play a central role in both his life and his music as the star moved back home around a year ago. Gregory Porter joins us now on Valley Public Radio. Gregory, welcome.
Glad to be with you.
A decade ago, would you have thought any of this would be possible, looking back now?
Absolutely not. You know, my mother instilled some great belief in me. Family and my support system always believed in me. In a way, just in the back of my head, with a lot of humility in my heart, I said, well, maybe.
I want to ask you about your mom, because this new record that you have out on Blue Note, Nat King Cole and Me, is not just a tribute to Nat King Cole, but in a way, it's also a tribute to your mom. For those of us who didn't know her, tell us about your mom. What made her so special?
Well, they call her Miss Ruth. She was just a person who had open arms and who was willing to help so many people. It didn't matter if they were related to her. And she was a minister, preacher in the Church of God in Christ. And so she raised me in the church and raised me singing. She had a big family, 5 boys and 3 girls. And, you know, she raised us all to be, you know, good, decent people. And a lot of that is coming out in the music, you know.
What was it about the Nat King Cole records that she had that you discovered that captured the interest of a young boy in the late 70s, early 80s?
In the absence of my father, I gravitated towards Nat's music and that lyric, those, you know, powerful lyrics, optimistic, uplifting, encouraging, lyrics like pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again, smile though your heart is aching, you know, the greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return. You know, the very last line of Nature Boy. So in an interesting way, I played my mother's records and I found a father figure in some interesting way. And that's this powerful thing that music can do. Yeah.
Now, talking about your life in Bakersfield, growing up there in the 1980s, as a young black man, you've talked about this publicly. You encountered not only discrimination, but outright racial violence. How difficult was that, and what did your mom tell you about those incidents?
She got in our face and told us that we are beautiful and worthy of respect wherever we go. Nobody is above us. Nobody is beneath us. And most of all, that we're a child of God and worthy of everyone's respect. And so when we had, they would urinate in the beer bottles and throw them through the window every weekend. When that would happen, and when they threw watermelons through the window and they burned a cross on the front yard, I guess I was 8, 9, 10 years old, just right in Bakersfield, California, right, near Highland High School. When that was happening, without her in our face and letting us know of our value, it probably would have felt more like a, you know, terrorist incident, you know, like it was. I remember my bed, mine and my brother's bed, was underneath the window, and one of the bottles came crashing through, and I remember just shaking the glass off and laying down in the living room and going to sleep. I remember the police and the flashlights, and but I was just so assured and so comforted that, oh, my mother's going to take care of it, that I just went back to sleep, you know? And but it was an extraordinary time. I think about it now, and I'm like, it's outrageous. But it was a very difficult time. My brother was shot by a couple of admitted racists who were looking for somebody black one night. And so that was a difficult moment in my childhood as well. But at the same time, when the neighbors heard about it, the people were bringing vegetables from their garden, and people just came to the door and rang on the doorbell and just wanted to not apologize, but show that there were other people, you know, in this world who felt differently. And it was a powerful moment. I think about it now. When I was going through it, it was like, I don't know, when you're in it, you don't feel the power and weight of it. But afterwards, now I look back at it and it's like, wow, what a tumultuous time. Yeah.
And with those experiences recently, you chose to move your family back to Bakersfield. Walk me through that. Why that move? You're admittedly on tour a lot, but having a home base back home.
My family is here. I have three sisters here, and most of the eight of us are still here, and I have a brother in Fresno as well. So, you know, New York is great, absolutely, and I still have a connection there, and like I said, I travel quite a bit. But Bakersfield is home. My mother is buried here, and, you know, a lot of cousins here. So it works in that respect. And, you know, I think the funny thing is in my career, the things that I got from Bakersfield, from the little small country churches that I grew up in, I put that feeling, that sound of that music, I put that into my music. And that's what caused my success. My last record before this new one, Take Me to the Alley, is an actual street in Bakersfield. It's Lakeview Avenue. It's Cottonwood Road. I think it's called Martin Luther King Boulevard now, but that's where my mother had her church. She had her church on Union Avenue as well. She wanted to go to the most difficult places and find the most difficult people to help, people that would have some effect by her helping them with food and helping them with housing and helping them with drug counseling. And so her work was here. And so my brother, Dion, has a church and does some of the very same things that my mother used to do. So I wanted to be near and be some support to him. And many of the things that have brought me success have come from Bakersfield.
Take me to the alley. Take me to the afflicted ones. Take me to the lonely ones that somehow lost their way.
Walk me through how it happened that you actually wound up on this path. You pursued football and had a scholarship at San Diego State. You were on the same team as Marshall Faulk, but things took a turn. You mentioned your mother's passing. Walk us through how you came to choose this path in your life.
At the very time I learned of my mother's breast cancer, I injured my shoulder and was unable to play football anymore. And music became a solace in a way. I was depressed. And my outlet was going to jam sessions in San Diego, where I was going to school. I kept my scholarship at San Diego State University, but I couldn't play anymore. And so going to the jam sessions and using music like I always have as this solace and this comforting agent, you know, people started to hear my voice and they were like, you know, and then before I knew it, I started to get invited to gigs. And, you know, the first gig, I think I got paid $25. And then, you know, maybe the next one, it was $50, you know. But it was an organic process. I met one of my best friends, Kamau Kenyatta, who's been with me for all of my records. He's been he's a professor at UCSD in San Diego. This is how I got into the music. But the process of recording and getting my name out there and all of these things, that was eluding me. And so at one point I decided to move to New York City and solely focus on music. And I cultivated a band and I started to go to just a little club in Harlem called St. Nick's Pub. And between St. Nick's Pub and various clubs in Brooklyn, I honed my craft for some years, quite frankly. And then my name started to be, you know, heard and known. And I guess my big break was probably working with Wynton Marsalis at the Jazz at Lincoln Center and making my first record, Water, which got a Grammy nomination. So that was my success, yeah.
There's a lot of pressure in the jazz world to, in many cases, kind of do it the way that others have. You know, until this record, your recordings were largely made up of original material, which is somewhat unusual. There's a big push to do standards in many cases. Walk me through the thinking there. Were you pressured by people in the industry? Hey, Gregory, you need to do a standards record to start out, or was it difficult to get your original material out front and center?
That was absolutely the truth. People were telling me to do music that already existed, and but I noticed one thing that was happening at the gigs when I would insert my originals into the set. People were interested in them after the show. Another thing that happened was when I went to record this record, the person who paid for it, I thought I was going to do a record of standards, but I conveniently never texted them the address to the studio. And so I was able to record without interruption or interjection. And once I gave them the record, this record of Water, which was mostly my my own material, they were like, oh, okay, well, I never considered this. And we put it out there, and in a few months, we got a Grammy nomination. So it was the right move. And in a way, that doing that the very first time, I think it gave me encouragement to do it with the following records, would Be Good and Take Me to the Alley and Liquid Spirit. So, yeah.
This new record, Nat King Cole and Me, is not the first time that you have delved into the music of the great Nat King Cole. Back a decade ago, you were involved in a stage play of that same name. How has your approach, your music, your philosophy changed since then? Have you evolved in that time, now that you're going back to this material?
I have, but only in the way that the idea that I had for the musical, it just rings more true now. I think when I first wrote the musical, I was going through some psychological process. Now I can look back at what I did and say, wow, that was me trying to self-heal myself. I wrote this musical, Nat King Cole and Me, and I literally wrote an apology for my father to say and sing to me. I wrote songs of great appreciation for my mother. I wrote songs about my feelings as a child. You know, I look at it now and I'm like, wow, this was like a lot of therapy. And I also was like projecting my dreams in a way. The second act of the play was me, Gregory Porter, performing the music of Nat King Cole in a grand setting with an orchestra, at this point in my career, nobody knew me. I didn't have a band. Nobody cared about Greg Reporter, the singer. But I had a dream to not only make my music, but to do the music of Nat King Cole. And this was like, you know, I wrote this dream down 15 years ago, and it's coming to fruition, you know, now. Yeah.
There's a lot of different sides to Nat King Cole. Of course, early in his career with the trio and the great influential piano work he did, the crossover recordings that had pop hits in the 1950s and shortly before his death in the early 60s, the Spanish language and other language recordings. What's sort of your favorite part of Nat's music and his oeuvre?
When I got to this music, I got it, you know, after his passing, but I got it in compilation. So I got a bit of the early trio stuff. I got what people call the pop, you know, stand-up singer that Nat King Cole was. So I liked it. It was all mixed for me, and I didn't have a lineage when I was listening to the music. And that worked perfectly for me. I mean, it was just this bundle of genius, all of these years of his career just put all into one. And for me, that's the way I think of Nat. I leave it up to the, you know, the scientists of music to think about, you know, who he was and what he was at every moment of his life. But I suspect the seriousness and value to jazz and to American music had been maintained throughout the entirety of Nat's career. And I think of the beauty and the seriousness of songs like Smile and Nature Boy and Pick Yourself Up and Dust Yourself Off.
If you smile through your fears and sorrow, smile and maybe tomorrow you'll see the sun come shining through for you.
If you can imagine my mother finishing civil rights protests wherever she be in the United States, and then coming home and choosing some music to listen to, and having her listen to Nat King Cole's Pick Yourself Up, Dust Yourself Off, Start All Over Again, or Smile Though Your Heart Is Aching, or The Greatest Thing You'll Ever Learn Is Just to Love and Be Loved in Return. I can imagine that, that type of music in the 60s as she came home from a protest, and having it mean something completely different to her than it does to, in a way, the rest of the world.
We're talking with Gregory Porter today. Before we go, you're now a father. How has that changed your music, especially given the role that your mom played in your life and what we've talked about with your father not being in your life? How has mm-hmm. that changed you?
I think about, you know, legacy and what am I giving him and what am I leaving him. It's something that lacked from my father, something I got a great deal of legacy and energy and information from my mother. If you listen to Liquid Spirit or Take Me to the Alley or No Love Dying, you are listening to essentially a condensation of my mother's sermons, even a song like Water. I want to leave my son a bit of my mother, a whole lot of me. I want him to say, that's my father who said, there's some doubt, there's out about this love, but I won't let it be. There will be no love dying here for me. I want to say something to him that he can carry in his heart after I'm gone. My mother did it for me, and you know, I want to do that for him. I think about it. I mean, I even say it as much in a song I wrote for him on my record, Take Me to the Alley, called Don't Lose Your Steam. And it basically, it's the retelling of Pick Yourself Up, Dust Yourself Off. It's basically saying, if the walls fall down, if the bottom falls out, don't lose your head of steam, don't lose your head of dreams. And I want him to hear it. I want it to come from me, and I want it to affect him and know that it's meant for him and for the rest of the world as well. Obviously, I want the world to get the message. I want to sell the records, but I want that message to go to him for sure, yeah.
Bakersfield's Gregory Porter is one of the world's top jazz vocalists today. The two-time Grammy Award winner recently performed a homecoming concert for his fans in the San Joaquin Valley at CSUB's Doré Theater. He joined us now on Valley Public Radio. Gregory, thanks so much for taking the time.
A real pleasure, man. Thank you so much.